Gardening is such a great activity, isn't it? I love it. Sometimes some things are the same year after year, but there's an infinite variety because of the different weather conditions and so forth about our plants, how mature they get, how they look, and certainly it changes how we tend our gardens every year and the best way to do it. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jeff Epping, our guest today. Jeff is director of horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. And he's going to talk about different kinds of gardens, and it just might change the way you look at your garden. I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You can join in with your questions, by the way, about your flower garden. We're staying with flowers and shrubs and maybe trees a little bit today with Jeff. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And I'll have to get to the page because I see some. We already have some photo posts, and we'll get to those. But I'm really excited, Jeff, because you are working on a new type of garden at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, gravel gardens.
Yeah, that's right. We actually, I was introduced to this concept by a friend by the name of Roy Diblick, who is an incredible plantsman, has done work all over the Midwest. And he visited a garden in Germany called Hermannshof and discovered this gravel gardening concept, brought it back, tried a little garden at his place, Northwind Perennial Farms near Lake Geneva. I saw it on a visit, and I said, what is this? This is cool. You know, tell me about it. And so he did. And in 2009, we put in our first little garden near the herb garden.
Yeah.
And Roy helped us out a little bit, laying it out. And I think we have some pictures on the
Facebook
site.
Page. Yeah.
Yep. And that's a picture of it. Since that time, we have planted three more. In fact, we just finished the biggest one yet yesterday, mm-hmm. right before the rain hit us, which was perfect. So if you come out to Olbrich, you'll see some of these in their infancy and some that have been around as long as almost 5 years now. So,
And the gravel garden, when you say it's a gravel garden, people are saying, well, what?
Yeah. And in fact, when I talked about it at first, I said, oh, a rock garden. I said, no, it's not a rock garden. It's a lot different. And the beauty of it is the maintenance lack thereof in the future. And so the idea is that you start out with 4 to 5 inches of a gravel. It's similar to pea gravel, but all the same size, so it doesn't pack tight. And what that gravel does for you is it prevents weed seeds from germinating. And so, you know, once you put it in, it's a sea of gravel with a few dots of plants around. But after two, three years, it's just a solid mass of plants. And you can design them in many different ways. But the real key is that you're selecting very drought-tolerant plants that once they are established are good on their own without additional water. You don't fertilize. Weeding is, like I say, very minimal. I never say maintenance-free because there's nothing in life that's maintenance-free, right? So once in a while, you get a dandelion seed or something dropping right down into the middle of a crown of a plant. And, of course, you know that'll germinate there and such. But for the most part, It is one of the easiest gardens that we have maintained at Olbrich, and I think one of the most beautiful.
Telling you. And we sent us some slides that we have, and we put up on the Facebook page. So if you want to see, as you're listening to the show today, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the place to go. You don't even have to be a member of Facebook to do that. And take a look at these slides, these photos of the gardens is just absolutely beautiful. And this is a garden that a home gardener could take on?
Absolutely. I mean, basically what we need to do is create a border around the garden of some sort. And we've done it a number of different ways. You could use something as simple as treated wood or, you know, some type of railroad tie or something, because you have to keep that 4 to 5 inch gravel depth consistent throughout the garden, right up to the edges.
Ah.
If you kind of just taper it off at the edge, that's where you'll have lots of weed seeds germinating.
Okay.
So we use different stone and boulders and junk we had laying around. In the beginning, you saw it was very visible, but over time, as the plants grow, that kind of disappears. But I say that, but it can add to the beauty of the garden depending on what you use for that border. So you have your existing soil, you create that border, you bring in your gravel and put stakes out and mark them at that right level, because if you do a bigger area, you want to make sure that you have the right depth. Once that gravel's in place, then you plant. And what we're dealing with then is like quart-sized pots or pots that are smaller that have a depth of about 4 to 5 inches. We obviously take the pot off. We peel off the top inch or so of soil on each root ball. And why we do that, and this was something that Roy taught us. He said, when you get plants from a nursery, and this is any perennials or usually perennials, he said, there's lots of weed seeds sitting up on that top layer. Because just innately things blow around as weed seeds do. Taking that off gets rid of a bunch right off the bat. And then we loosen up the root ball, take off any excess soil if need be, and then just... Well, you can use a trowel, but oftentimes just use big rubber gloves or leather gloves and dig like a dog, make the hole, just kind of set the plant in there. It doesn't have to be setting on the soil below, but as long as it's within an inch, roots will grow down and then mend in. Just fill the gravel all back around it, and you're good to go. So you progress through the garden planting, and when you're done, it looks like more gravel than plants, but... In a year or so, it fills in, and then within 3 years, it's just a solid mass. So it's a little different, but it's all the work's up front, basically.
Yeah. Now you've had some experience with it over a few years. Drawbacks? Have you seen any drawbacks to them?
Well, the one thing you have to really be cognizant of is keeping the organic matter from building up in that gravel. Okay. So when you plant, you're very careful that you're not spilling your soil around. When we plant, we have a 5 gallon bucket at our side while we peel that inch, like I said, of soil off top. That's all going in the bucket. We don't want any of that mixed in between the plants. And then after the planting, in the future, then your biggest maintenance chore is cleaning that garden up really well in the spring. So we like to leave the plants up all winter because they're beautiful. The birds and such will eat seeds right through the fall. And then in the spring, we cut those back to the gravel level. We rake, and we actually use a blower. It'll be an electric blower, a gas blower, and just clean all that organic matter out. The more, the better. I mean, a little is not going to hurt you, but, we're pretty...
Want to be tidy.
Yeah, we're very tidy. There you go. Tidy-minded, as the English would say. And then you're good to go. In the beginning, though, you have to remember you're planting these things in a sea of gravel. So watering is going to be frequent during that first season, especially the first, say, 6 to 8 weeks or so.
Yeah.
You might be watering every day.
Yeah.
But you don't have to water heavy. You just get those root balls, moist. And then after about that 6-8 week period, then they're starting to root in, and then they're good through the winter. And then the next season, we'll water during just periods of drought. And then the next season, they're pretty much good to go on their own. What's nice is we've been doing it for a while. We've seen, how they progress. We've made a few, mistakes along the way where we were planting. I couldn't buy a big enough plant in that 4.5 inch size pot, so we used a smaller plug. Well, those didn't get rooted in well enough before the first winter, and we lost some during the winter months. This last winter was pretty rough anyway.
Yeah.
But you learn as you go. Other than that, one winter we had a real heavy snow cover, about 2 feet of snow lasted all winter long. Well, the voles, or the metal mice, got in, and when the snow melted, we saw all these perfect piles of soil mix all through the garden. We're like, what the heck is that? Here it is. They went down and ate the crown out of every coneflower in the whole garden. So, like I say, nothing's maintenance free. You're always dealing with Mother Nature, but for the most part, this is a concept that I am absolutely sold on. Mm-hmm. We have, since Olbrich, we've pushed out into some of the Madison parks. We're doing some parking lot islands over at Goodman Pool. They're in their second season. Rheindahl Park on the east side. My friend Roy has done some gardens throughout the Chicago area. And, you know, where you don't have a lot of money for labor and maintenance of these of gardens, so often we see, you know, great intentions, lots of money go in up front, but no money to maintain them in the future. And it just kind of slowly goes downhill after about 5 years. Where these,
if the you other can, way around.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's a wave of the future.
Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. You can join in with your, maybe you've got a question about gravel gardens, or maybe you've got another plant question. We hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. I had a post from Dana on my Facebook page. Was recently at Olbrich and saw several gorgeous plantings with sedges. Can they be used like ornamental grasses, and where do I find them?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. The other sustainable garden, as the gravel gardens are, that we've been working on at Olbrich are meadows, and we've created some with grasses. We've also created some with sedges, and a number of the sedges are very shade-tolerant. There are some that grow right in full sun, just like ornamental or, you know, typical grasses. But the shade-tolerant ones we've taken advantage of in a couple areas where we had bluegrass turf, and as the trees got bigger, that turf got shaded out, and we said, all right, let's try something a little different here. And the sedge that's most available is one called Pennsylvania sedge, Carex pennsylvanica. And you can find that at a number of garden centers, those that are a little more progressive maybe, or talk to a local landscaper. They usually have a line, you know, wholesale nurseries that produce these types of plants. Prairie Nursery is one. Neil DeBoll up there in Westfield specializes in that sort of plant, because a lot of these sedges are native, and which is nice because they're well adapted to the conditions that we have right here in Wisconsin. So I'm guessing that Dana's talking about a little area we call the sedge meadow.
Yeah.
And that's again, it's a little pocket shaded by a large honey locust, so it's in a good amount of shade. And we, in the fall, one season, we knocked off the turf that was there with Roundup, let it decompose all winter long. And the next spring, we didn't till or anything. We just plugged in this Pennsylvania sedge about every 12 inches. And by that fall, it was pretty much a solid mass. We mow it in the spring, and it's good to go for the rest of the season. And again, they filled in over time, and Pennsylvania sedge tillers, just like bluegrass lawns would do, and
right.
So it fills in very nicely.
And again, this is a sort of a drought-resistant type plant, too? Is it?
It is. It is. You'll see it. It grows throughout the state of Wisconsin. You'll
see it in
woodlands. In fact, if you're in more of an open woodland, you walk through and it looks like you're walking through a lawn. And more times than not, it's Pennsylvania sedge. But there are many others. There's a lot of different ones out there. Carex rosea, Carex remota. There's a whole gamut of them. And as time goes on and these native plants are maybe more appreciated and understood and nurseries start growing them more, I think we'll see a big variety available out there. You bet.
Jeff Epping, our guest today. We're having some problems with the phones, but I think we have those problems resolved now. So if you were trying to get in, which I know quite a few people were, you can do it now. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jason Butler, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, Doug Soldat will be joining us. Help you take good care of your lawn as we go into the fall season. He always has some great advice for ways to keep the use of chemicals to either non-existent or just to a bare minimum as well. So we'll look forward to that. Right now, Jeff Epping from Olbrich Botanical Gardens, our guest today. Always fun to have him along, and certainly if you have questions, join in, 1-800-642-1234. email us at talk@wpr.org and post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And if you have some photos, I've got to go on the page myself to see, because Jason told me there are some cool photos up already. So I'm going to take a look at that. You can take a look at it too. And I can see that the phones are really working now, because the phone lines are filling very quickly. Let's go to Brian in Green Bay. Hi, Brian. Thank you for calling.
I have a question, please. Good morning.
Morning.
How big is Old Brick Gardens?
How large is the garden? Yeah, talk a little bit about how your garden is organized as well.
You bet. The garden is about 16 acres in size. That's the outdoor gardens. We also have a beautiful 10,000 square foot conservatory. So, you know, if you get down here in the winter or up here in the winter, you can check that out as well. But the garden is, it's organized. Actually, we have the central circle. We call the Great Circle at Olbrich, and everything kind of sort of radiates out like spokes of a wheel from that center point. And it's a mixture of many different types of display gardens. So starting with the sunken garden, meadow garden, we have a wildflower garden, which is, absolutely beautiful in the spring, a little serene green now. Herb garden, perennial garden,
rose
garden, and a Thai garden, which is probably the most unusual of all. A tropical style garden here in Madison. So, yeah, it's not the biggest garden, but it's packed in, and it's set up as sort of a series of garden rooms. So you wander from one to the next, and often seems a little bigger because of that separation from one space to the next. I have a great horticulture staff, very creative bunch. We have lots and lots of volunteers that help us out to maintain the garden. And beyond the gardens themselves, we have an education department, both adult education and children's educational programs, special events throughout the year. If you hit our webpage at olbrich.org, you'll get a real feel for what we have to offer.
And a whole bunch of really friendly volunteers and staff. I mean, people there are really nice.
Well, you know, when you work at a garden, it's not a bad place to be. So it tends to keep you in a good mood. So yeah, I would definitely agree with Larry on that one.
Oh, and I'm looking now at our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and I see Michael, who has sent some beautiful photos in the past, has sent one. He says, "Our last rose of the season." Michael from New Berlin, and beautiful, beautiful shot there. You may have a photo as well. I hope you'll put it up on my Facebook page. Let's go to Judy in Minocqua with a question. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I hope your guests could give me some direction on a issue I'm having with a blue spruce tree.
Okay.
I had a large spruce transplanted from a nursery about 4 years ago. And it was put in with one of those big industrial spades. It was about 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much have been babying that tree for the past 3-4 years. And all of this, I noticed I'm having die-off on the bottom. And so we cleaned that up a couple times. And it seems like it's very dry on the inside. And now I've got browning on the top. And it's not that this tree doesn't get water.
Mm-hmm.
It has the morning sun and then part afternoon till about maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. Well, there's a lot of different possibilities. Anything from mites to some fungal diseases that are sometimes a problem on blue spruce. We got to remember that blue spruce comes from where? The West, Colorado, where the humidity is next to nothing. And when we bring those types of plants to the Midwest, they do well for a while, but over time, they tend to succumb to oftentimes fungal diseases. But in your case, I'm thinking there's probably some transplant shock involved, because whenever we transplant something out of a nursery, you're probably get about 10% of the root system. So, but it sounds like you're doing all the right things. As far as it getting it established, what I would suggest is that you call a local arborist, have them come out and look at it, because you obviously have a lot invested in that tree, not only money, but time, and they can really, tell you exactly what it is and treat for it. or not. I mean, sometimes things just need a little time, and they can bounce right back. But without seeing it in person, it's hard to make that call. But you know, there's great certified arborists throughout the state, and I would suggest you give them a call.
That's very, very good advice, I think. Thanks, Judy, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give David and Madison a chance to join us. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. Hello, gentlemen. we live in Madison. We go up to Door County almost every weekend. I have noticed a very light green-colored, you know, what appears to be a very invasive vine. I've been told it's called a wild grapevine. I don't know if that's true or not. But apparently it's a strangulation-type vine that will kill the host. I'm curious what it is, if you know, and what, if anything, is being done about it.
Boy, lots of people have been asking me about that as well, Jeff.
Well, tell me about it, Larry.
Well, it looks like, it really looks like kudzu, a little bit like kudzu. Mm-hmm. People think it's kudzu, but it's really not kudzu.
Right.
So far, kudzu can't live.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness it can't live here in Wisconsin.
Right.
And people do call it the wild grapevine. I've also heard it called, was it porcupine?
Does that have a flower, or are we just talking about foliage that you're seeing right now?
I've been told that it doesn't have a flower that I'm aware of, but okay. I've been told it does have a small grape-like seed that pops
sure.
up, but it's not edible.
Yeah, and there is wild grape. They're definitely... aggressive. Typically, they will grow with tendrils, like any grape. They'll grow up into larger trees, and sometimes they'll cover them. And if they do that, they can actually shade that tree out. I am not aware, really, that people are out controlling it in our native habitats. But you know, obviously, in a more maintained situation, you'd want to keep that under control. Yeah, right. The reason I asked, because right now, if you drive along the highways, you'll see a vine. It's called something like wild cucumber vine or something.
Yeah.
Its scientific name escapes me at the moment, but it has a very white flower, and it's actually very beautiful. And so I think it's actually a native vine. So sometimes, you know, vines can coexist. I mean, that's how they've developed in nature. But every once in a while, you get something like that that can really cause some damage
yeah.
if you let it go wild.
Yeah, the cucumber vine doesn't really kill, I don't think.
No, yeah, I think it dies doesn't... to the ground every season, starts fresh,
yeah.
So it's never quite that invasive.
But we may hear some more about the wild grapevine, because I didn't really, frankly, get to studying it myself. So, David, stay listening. There may be others calling in with some comments about it. Lori in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Hi, Lori. Lori, are you there? Well, I thought she was there. Maybe she's not there.
Yes.
We had a Facebook question from Brad. What kind of plants do you plant in the gravel? Could you give some more examples of the kinds
of
plants?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a great question and one that I wanted to get to. Basically, you want to start out with the most drought-tolerant species. So we have used both native plants and some non-native as well, but they're all native to droughty environment. So the natives here in the state, a lot of the dry prairie plants that you would see growing, in our native habitats, things like prairie drop seed or side oats grama grass or Boodaloo, another name for it, wild petunia, a number of asters, and then more typical gravel or drought-tolerant perennials, even like yarrow. Mm. Some of the asters are very good. There's a allium called Summer Beauty, which does particularly well. One of the grasses that we use in non-gravel and gravel beds called Cecilaria or autumn moor grass. Little blue stem. In a bigger gravel garden, you could use big blue stem,
mm-hmm.
Rattlesnake master, one of my favorite plants, Eryngium yuccifolium. You could say that 10 times fast. But, you know, so they just have to have that innate nature of being drought tolerant, and that's the beauty of them. And then they'll last a long time in the garden. And with that said, back in Germany at Hermannshof, where Cassie and Schmidt did this research and developed these gardens, he's had these gardens in existence for over 20 years, and he experimented with different types of gravel, depth of gravel, different plants. And what he found is that the plants kind of grow lean and mean, and so they don't need to be divided like often we do in our typical rich soils,
right,
where we establish sort of English-styled perennial borders and such. So once they're in the ground, they can go, literally forever with this method, which is one of the beauties of it.
Oh man, I guess so. Jeff Epping, director of horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Give us a call with your quote. We may be having some problems with our phones again, but give us a call. We'll see at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can certainly post your questions or comments there. Someone else was wondering about blooming. What's blooming at Olbrich right now?
Oh, boy, there's lots going on. Calamint is particularly beautiful right now throughout the garden, which is actually in the gravel gardens and in our other beds. Bees just love it. We have active hives on site, and the plants are literally moving with them. But, the late summer into fall blooming, perennials are all coming along nice. There's some roses blooming in the rose garden, of course. Hydrangeas, the PG type hydrangea paniculata are all over. I mean, you just got to come out and see it. And of course, the annual displays are peak right now because they've been developing all season long, and it's been one of the best summers I remember in a while. I mean, when we think back a couple of years to that drought, which was the lowest of the low points in gardening, and then have a season like we've had with timely rainfalls and cool temperatures, yeah, the gardens really do look well, as most gardens do around the state right now.
Absolutely. Got a Facebook post from Kevin wondering about perennial weeds with rhizomes. If you take like quackgrass, for example, or Canada thistle.
Yeah, that's a great question. And those are the types of weeds you got to take care of before you get you even start.
Yeah.
Because in things like bindweed, another tenacious weed that all three of those spread by, rhizomes underground. So you got to get rid of those right off the bat. If you don't, you're going to have to deal with them in place after the plants are already in, which is often harder. Some of those weeds you can pull.
Yeah.
And they just keep coming back. So if you have that situation, probably have to resort to something like Roundup or glyphosate to have that chemical translocated into the root system so you actually get rid of them. But that's a great question, and that's one of those things that in any type of garden, you need to clean those up before you start going.
Tom in Merton has a question. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have a Norway maple in my yard where last year the leaves, which are normally quite large on the west side of the tree, were very small. Mm-hmm. This year, the leaves on the east side of the tree are very small. The west side looks fine, and I've had several limbs die out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, there's verticillium wilt is a disease that can sometimes be a problem with some of the maples. In fact, we lost a couple maples this season, like the snake bark maples, which are a different species, but it's very much related. And you'll sometimes see that where one season a big limb will be affected more than the next, but eventually the tree succumbs to the disease, and it's a disease that's in our soil. So if it's there, it won't go away. There's not really a cure for verticillium wilt, but keeping the tree as healthy as possible through, maybe some watering during times of heavy drought or something like that will keep it alive as long as possible. There's other possibilities too, like girdling roots that you might see. But the fact that you saw it on one side of the tree one year and then nothing the next, but now it's the other side, it's just it's probably a sign that there's some vascular issue. And so a root-related or cambium-related issue that, how old is the tree? Is
there's also some nodes that have grown on there. They look almost like warts. And over time, they get longer and longer.
Yeah, I wonder if you have like some canker diseases probably that have set in a fungal disease that now is starting to show up in the the rest of the tree.
Ah, okay. So when that tree dies and I replace it, I should replace it with anything outside the maple family, huh?
Well, there's a group of plants that are subject to verticillium wilt, and there's others that are completely immune. And you go on the internet and just type in verticillium wilt resistant trees or shrubs or anything like that, you'll come up with a nice list. A lot of UW Extension outlets list things like that or Arboretum and such.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I'm not happy to hear it, but...
No, never you are. Right.
Yep. Thanks, Tom. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Sherry in Chippewa Falls next. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I have a very old evergreen, and I'm not sure what kind of evergreen tree it is, but we cut the back several years ago, the bottom growth. So it's probably about 4 feet, 5 feet from the bottom is cut away. So you see the bark of the tree. And then underneath it, about 8 feet around, you see the root system that is above the ground, you know, and then below the ground, and then, the roots are pretty healthy and strong. My question is, you have some of the, falling of the evergreen needles, and, it looks ugly underneath there. And so what could I do to plant something, or do I need to protect those above ground roots? What can I do to dress it up underneath?
Right. Well, that's a great question. And one of the things that we have to pay close attention to whenever we plant around any tree is that, that root system, like you said, is right there at the top. And 90%+ of the root system is going to be in the top 12 to 18 inches of soil on any tree. And so never, ever take a rototiller under a tree and start working up the soil thinking that, I'm going to plant, flowers or such underneath it, because you are going to be doing some serious damage to that root system. And some trees are more tolerant of disturbance than others, but you would never want to do something like that. So if you want to establish a long-term ground cover under a tree, older tree, what I would do is just plant in between those major roots for sure, and just dig a hole as big as that perennial that you're planting. And I would go with things like quart size pots or even plugs. And so you're doing as little damage as possible. Things that will tolerate that dry situation. And actually some of the native sedges would work in that situation. Hosta is an old standby. Epimedium is the one that will withstand that kind of shade. But you got to remember that there are all those roots there, and it is shady, but more than anything, it is dry, because that tree is sucking out all the moisture in that zone, and it needs it. And you don't want to deal with that. So if you are establishing something under there, you're going to have to be diligent about watering those plants, which typically the tree itself will benefit from that, as long as you don't overdo it. Otherwise, just a covering of a light mulch in between the plants to get, help them out and help the tree out. Trees, in nature always have a natural ground cover. I mean, they are a natural mulch, the leaves that fall from the tree, the debris. And when we put them out in the landscapes that we, maintain, we often don't have that, but trees will benefit from that. If it's a little's good, a lot's not always better, though. You don't want to put it a foot deep and pile it up around the trunk of the tree, but a little bit will help out, keep that root system moist and cool. That's kind of the story.
Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're Sherry, welcome. Thank you a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbricht Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. Questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Actually, have a line open. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Mark in Black River Falls. Hi, Mark.
Yes, hello. I also have Norwood maple, and it's showing a fungus on its bark. My question is, can I spray it with, say, a vinegar and hope that would retard the growth of the fungus?
I wouldn't recommend that. And when you say you see a fungus on the tree, I assume you're seeing like a mushroom type structure, a conch or something like that. Is that what you're seeing, or something different?
It's just like a felt, a green felt.
Oh,
you know, a green.
All right. If it's green, it may actually just be like a lichen or a moss or something like that,
yeah,
which actually won't hurt the plant. If you go walk through a woodland, you'll see that all over the place. And I think you might do more damage than good by trying to kill something like that with any chemical. Now, if it's a mushroom or a conch or something like that coming out of the tree, well, that's just the fruity, and that's like the flower of the fungus, which has already invaded the tree, and it's deep within, and it's feeding on dead wood that's within the tree. So at that point, you're not going to really put a dent in it, and you're seeing. You know, something that's developed for probably many years. Enjoy the tree while you can.
Yeah, leave it alone. Leave it alone, Mark. Thanks a lot for calling. And Helen in West Salem. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about a terrible crabgrass problem we have. 2 years ago, we had a bad spot in our lawn, and someone came in and took out what was there and added dirt, and they told us there was weed seeds in it, but they seeded it. And then we, on top of that, we put in a new small tree. And so now 2 years have gone by, and we've had lawn care, and the grass all around this spot is beautiful. But we have all this crabgrass. Now, is there anything we could put on the crabgrass? I know it's an annual.
Right.
That won't hurt the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So that real grass can come up next spring.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's right around the base of the tree, I would suggest not having any grass grow around the base of young trees, because any type of grass, whether it be the nicer grass, you're talking about like bluegrass or fescue or crabgrass, they're in serious competition with the root system of that young tree. So typically we'll do a light mulching around the drip line of the tree to give that a better situation. Now, Larry has a turf grass expert coming on next week, right, Larry?
Yeah, does.
So I may say hold out for his recommendation. Of course, there's Roundup, which can, you know, take something out if you're willing to use a chemical like that. There's actually pre-emergent crabgrass herbicides as well. But, you know, if we can do it in a more organic manner, I'm all for it. And at Olbrich, we use little to no chemicals out in the garden, although it looks like we do, because we have lots of volunteers hand-pulling things and trying to keep on top of things going to seed. And that if you can do all that, you're a step ahead of the game. So I'm not capping out too much, I don't think. If you want to go with those heavier duty chemicals, you certainly can. But I would be interested in hearing what our expert has to say, if he has some organic means.
Yeah, Doug will have some advice.
You bet.
But those two chemicals wouldn't hurt the tree. I mean, it's not next to the tree.
Right. As long as you don't spray on the trunk of the tree where it can be translocated in, it will not hurt the tree, right?
Yeah.
If you follow the label directions, of course.
Good luck, Helen. Thanks so much for calling. Jeff Epping, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. And I should also mention the gardening gang up in Rice Lake. You'll be happy to know that a couple of Rice Lake gardeners, Kathy and Dave Wellsan, are sitting in today and having, I hope, a good time listening in on the show. And so just a little shout out to Rice Lake gardeners today from here. And we have callers all over the place. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Margaret in Houston, Minnesota, though, is next. So let's go to her. Hi, Margaret. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. I love your show. Yeah, I have a problem with my lawn that's been getting worse for the last 3 years. It started out just as circles, fairly small. And now those circles of light green grass, it's beginning to show up much lighter than the rest of the grass. And in my back, I have a big yard, and the backyard is getting so it's almost all this very light green. It's kind of like a clover leaf.
Does it have a flower?
Circles, round circles.
And does it have any flower at all?
I think it does a little, maybe a little yellow flower, if I remember. It hasn't blossomed this year yet, I don't think. But
they're in round circles?
Yes, very round. Yeah. But now they've kind of spread, so they're it's getting to be blotches. And also, I've tried planting two maple trees the last few years, and they've both died after they started, you know, they grew a year, and the next year they died.
Mm-hmm. I don't think those two things. I doubt that those two things are related.
No, I wouldn't guess. Right. And of course, the last 2 years have not been the easiest 2 years to establish anything with the droughty conditions that we've had and the severe winter.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like a dollar spot gone crazy or something.
Yeah. So you're thinking it's a plant or it's a disease?
No, it's a plant.
It's
round like a little clover leaf. In fact, that's what I thought it was a couple years ago, and we tried weed killer on it, and it hasn't gotten any better.
Wow. There's so many possibilities.
There's so many.
Without seeing a picture, it makes it tough.
You know, one thing you might do is if you can take a photo, a good close-up. Well, you could take a photo and...
All right.
Probably send it. Minnesota's got a great extension service, a horticulture extension service.
Okay.
If you, or even go to your county extension office, because there will be a horticulture agent with extension in that office.
Okay.
Or get the person's name or number. You can either mail it to them or email a photo. They may be able to answer it for. I think that's what I do.
Yeah, and if you can go into the office, bring a piece of that plant, put it in a plastic bag, and bring it in. That's the best way. It's always hard to identify something without in your hands. But the more you can give them, the better idea they'd have for you.
That's what I do, and I think you can probably get some really good advice. I mean, it doesn't until you know the plant and you know what's going on, it really doesn't pay to be throwing chemicals at it anyway, because you don't know what's going to work and what won't
absolutely.
So I would definitely do that, Margaret. Thank you very much for calling, though, and good luck with that. Round leaves and then they form a circle. I'm just
blanking out on that one.
Me too. Heidi in Sheboygan Falls. Hi, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I have a question about a beautiful tree we have in our backyard. It's over 20 years old, and it has a gorgeous burgundy leaf. And for the last, I'd say, 5 years, it has formed sickle-shaped growths that are black and bumpy.
Mm.
And it takes turn. That doesn't sound good.
It sounds like a cherry tree to me. There's some ornamental cherries, one Schubert cherry, which has a beautiful... burgundy foliage, and there's a couple others, Canadian red and some, but many cherry trees, including our native cherries, succumb to a fungal disease called black knot. And if you go into any woodland in the state of Wisconsin where cherries are growing, you're more than likely to see that disease, because it's a native thing that's been around as long as cherries have. And often when the trees are young and very vigorous, very happy, you don't see it. And then as the trees mature and slow down, you'll start to see the black knot take hold. And the longer it's in the tree, the worse it gets. In fact, we just removed one from the garden this spring that we girdled the year before, because we wanted to take it down. We knew that the black knot was just, it took over 3/4 of the tree. And why we didn't just cut it down is because many cherries have the propensity to sucker. And if you just cut it off every root that's left in the ground sends up suckers. And if you girdle the tree instead, where you take off the bark about 6 inches wide, you know, a foot from the base, the tree actually dies a slow death. It's kind of mean, but but actually the root system starves. It doesn't receive the carbohydrates produced by the top of the tree, so the root system collapses. The whole tree dies. You can cut it off, and you're good. You don't have all those suckers popping up everywhere. And that's true with like things like trembling aspen as well. And a trick that I learned from the guys out at the Arboretum here in town a few years ago.
Yeah, great idea.
So sorry about the tree.
Yeah, oh no, that's good advice. And I like the idea about not having the suckers.
Yeah. It's a goner, so...
Right. And you can live with it for a while, but once it gets to the point where you just can't stand looking at it anymore, that's the time to
get rid of it. Take it out. Colette and Toma, hi.
Hi, good morning. I wonder if you could make some suggestions for an area that is covered with a lot of, the umbrella is all oak trees, and raking is not high on my list. So something that would be easy to rake for ground cover instead of rocks or mulch, something else that could be there in that area. Mm-hmm. And then also a moderately growing tree along the lines of a river birch that we could plant under those, not directly under an oak tree, but in close proximity to oak trees.
Here's something to think about. You know, when everybody thinks about ground covers, they think about a plant that gets 6 or 8 inches tall. But when you have a large tree like an oak or even a smaller tree, you can use a ground cover that gets 4 feet or even 6 feet. And when you said the ground cover under a big oak tree like that, I thought immediately of a hydrangea, the hydrangea arborescens, or the smooth hydrangea, which is actually a native shrub in the U.S. and one that you could plant, you know, every 4 feet on center, even farther apart, and over time it will sucker slowly and fill that space. Another plant that works really well for that, and we've done this at Olbrich under an old green ash tree, which is a beautiful old thing that we love, and actually we're protecting from emerald ash borer at least for several years, and that is a shrub called bush honeysuckle. And it's not an invasive honeysuckle. It's actually a native plant, and it's not a honeysuckle at all. It's Dervilla. But that is a suckering shrub, and again, only gets about 3-4 feet tall, has beautiful yellow flowers, has gorgeous fall color, and that, very compatible. It's very tolerant of dry conditions. If you want, and even something like the native hazelnut, Corallus americana, that's another one that you could use. And you said you don't want to be raking around and raking the leaves. Well, those would do just fine. They drop their leaves. Then the leaf matter, again, is the best mulch that they could have. It's what Mother Nature does all the time, and the trees are very happy and live to be very old without us having to intervene and plant something like Pachysandra or you know, those types of old standbys. So think about that. And then I think your second question was about the replacement or another tree. You said river birch. And I don't know your soil conditions exactly. I don't know the exposure, but I mean, you know, there's a plethora.
Sand and sun.
Okay.
Sand and sun. Yes.
Well, again, and I think, you know, other oaks, other nut trees, certainly. Kentucky coffee tree comes to mind, a beautiful thing.
That's a really pretty tree.
It is. It's a great, and I would stay away from something like paper birch, probably. I don't know exactly your exposure, but, you know, those like lots of moisture. River birch might be a possibility. Your pH needs, you can't have real high pH, but I'm guessing you probably don't there. I don't know if there's a area, arboretum, garden center, nature center, you know, visit, see what you like. There's lots of possibilities, you know, for you.
Ground covers that you mentioned, the hydrangeas, those would be compatible under, like, the trees that you mentioned?
Absolutely. You know, and again,
wonderful.
You're planting under a big tree. Don't go under there with a rototiller. Just plant in the spot and then keep a close eye on the watering of those because they're going to have a tough time getting established for a couple years. But once they do, they're very compatible and they're very drought tolerant, and I think they'll do well for you.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff Epping, our guest. Jeff, we were earlier talking about gravel gardens, and if I am not mistaken, you are giving a talk.
Yes, next Tuesday, that would be August 26th, at Olbrich Gardens. I have a little lecture. It's a two-hour long, 6:30 to 8:30. I'll show you how to establish them. Show you have a little PowerPoint presentation. Dual screen, so twice the images. And then we're going to take a walk out in the garden and see the real thing. And that's always the best thing to do. But I've taught it a number of years now, and it's very popular, lots of people. So, just call in to the garden. And
they'd like to know ahead of time.
If possible, if possible, but it isn't essential. And again, hit our website. There's all sorts of great class. I know Mark Dwyer's, I think, coming down next week to give a lecture. He's the horticulture director at Janesville Rotary Garden. And there's experts all over the area that do workshops and classes and such. So check it out.
That's one of the cool things about being a member there. I really love that. You get this listings of things. And you can keep busy for a long time.
Yes, you can.
At the gardens for sure. Well, Jeff Epping, our guest today, he's director of horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have him come by here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, my guest Jeff Epping. Jeff is Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. He comes by every so often to talk with us about what's going on at the gardens and then to visit about your gardens as well. I hope you'll join in if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got a great photo to share. You can do that up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or you can also post a question as well. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Jeff in Appleton up next, though, with a question, so let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jeff.
Oh.
I have a question about, we're just starting to build our garden in the front of our home. We purchased a place a couple of years ago, and we removed a cement walkway that is facing south, when we've been just joyously enjoying laying these cut stones that we've purchased, and we want to have some spacing between this stone. We filled it with screenings. We put a bed of sand in, but what we'd like to do is we'd like to backfill it now with dirt and put a natural plant. I have heard thyme, and what my question is there anything that would be maybe more durable? And that can also handle, because of the location, half of that walkway is going to get more water than the other half, maybe two-thirds to a third, because it's a passive solar home and it has a large overhang.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if there's anything that can handle, it won't be a lot of foot traffic, but something for this part of the country that I can put in there. And am I too late in the year to do it?
Appleton.
I don't know. I don't know if you
got going on it right away.
Yeah, right. Well, that mixture that you put in between the pavers, you might still make it well drained at least. I don't know that I would put like a regular soil in there, but if you mix that limestone screenings with a little bit, give it some moisture retention, but still well drained. A lot of the creeping sedums, like there's a one called Sedum sexangular. There's just a number of them. If you can go to one of your area nurseries and get the little creeping types, which actually just kind of root right along the stems. I've done this at my own home. We do it at Olbrich and in some locations. They thrive in that well-drained soil and droughty conditions. In fact, you know, a lot of those sedums you put in a regular garden soil and it's too fertile and too moist, they end up rotting off on you. But in a situation like you have there, that's a good one. Thyme, yeah, you mentioned thyme. That's one that would do well in that situation as well. you know, if you want to do a mixture of things, you could, you know, look at a lot of the rock garden type plants. There's some creeping baby's breath, Gypsophila repens is one. There's some nice little dianthus that only get maybe an inch or two tall. They'll flower. They look pretty cool. I bet if you got on, you know, Google something like path plants or something like that, you know, in that order, you'll probably come up with a huge list. But those are some ideas I have.
I think.
And so you want to be consistent with that soil mix, and then just select the plants that'll do well in that situation. And it's kind of fun, actually.
There you go.
Looking forward to it. Yep. Really appreciate the information.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. And Diana in Middleton, hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hello, thanks for taking my call. On August 1st, we had a bad storm in Middleton, and our locust tree, which is 20 years old and about 30 feet high, was struck by lightning. Mm-hmm. There's a small strike place up in the main section of the bark, and then there was quite a bit of distribution of mulch from around the tree blown out, and then you could see small pieces of bark removed from the base, around the base, and then the ground had a hole from the strike. Now the locust leaves are starting to turn yellow and fall down. It looks like we have a little bit of yellow snow on the front yard. Is there anything I can do to help that tree, and is it just a matter of watching to see what will happen?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, the one thing you want to do is try to keep the tree as happy and stress-free as possible. So, you know, if we...
Water,
yep. I don't know really if it's all that recommended to fertilize trees anymore. I think typically if your soil's good and it was healthy otherwise, I think water's probably the biggest thing. If there's any parts of the bark that are ragged and kind of shredded, it's good to make kind of a nice clean cut back to the live tissue, then that any wounding will it'll heal over much quicker. It'll form what's called callus tissue, and then it'll start to heal over. Unfortunately, you know, you just can't see what's going on in that tree, and even if you could, I don't think there's not a lot you can do beyond just, you know, trying to keep it as healthy as possible and have it recover on its own.
Yeah, there's... Actually, there are some arborists who can actually X-ray the tree, but I've seen some of those X-rays. They're pretty cool, actually.
I bet. I haven't seen that.
But frankly,
what do you do anyway?
Yeah, I mean, what do you do?
You'll see what's happening, but there's probably nothing you can do.
Yeah, short of just, as you say, take good care of it, water, right. Make sure it gets plenty of water in it.
Right. And it sounds like it's a younger tree, which would be a little bit more vigorously growing. So I think I think your chances of it recovering are better than if it were, say, a 75-year-old tree, which they have a little harder time dealing with that if it's severe.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, you're thanks, welcome. Diana. And Dick in Mequonago, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a Rosa Sharon tree, and it had died. It had flowered up in the spring and that, and leaved up, and now it's dead. I was just wondering if you had any idea on what happened.
I think it's a victim of our very severe winter. We lost a number of plants at the garden, and I've seen especially Japanese yew throughout the city damage. This winter was really interesting. I mean, we lost plants that... I never have seen even damaged, and then plants that I would assume would be damaged were fine. I was talking to Ed Hasselkus, a horticulture professor emeritus from UW here. I got my master's with, and he said in his 52 years in the biz, he said he's never seen a more severe winter than we had this winter. So Rosa Sharon is not one of the hardiest of plants out there. I mean, we grow it at Olbrich. Ours actually are flowering now, so ours didn't get hit. But, you know, every situation is a little different, exposure and all that. But I think that's probably what did it in. And I think a lot of the damage we saw was still related to the drought, severe drought we had 2 years ago. Plants were still stressed. Carbohydrate reserves were low still. Root systems were still not fully recovered. And so we saw some damage, I think, as a result of you know, some of that, or that was definitely a factor in it all. So, you know, with that said, like I say, we're still growing them and have for years. So plant another one. Support your local nursery.
There you go.
I'm going to do that.
All right. Thanks, Dick. Thanks a lot for calling. All right, Todd in Spring Green. By the way, we have an open line. We can get you on pretty quickly with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Todd in Spring Green up next. Hi, Todd.
Hello. I was just driving west, going to do some fishing this weekend, and I was listening to your show. And a couple callers ago, a gentleman was talking about trying to fill in the space between the rocks on his walkway.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine runs a landscape business, and a trick that is really slick. You can take some moss, gather some moss, and it can be dried. It actually works better if it dries. Put it in a blender with buttermilk.
Mm-hmm.
Blend it up, and then you pour that buttermilk over stone. Mm-hmm. We did it on a drywall we made, or anywhere, and it just looks like it's been there for 100 years. It's amazing.
That's
the moss
cool.
just takes off. Yeah,
cool.
It works really well. It works really good with walls, too, but just wanted to give that... I'm going to get going now and do some fishing.
All right.
Oh, that
good for you.
Awesome.
Thanks, Todd. And I've actually seen that done, and it actually does work well. The issue or the trick is that you need to have a place that's going to support it in the long haul. So you need to have the kind of the right conditions.
Right. I think shadier, moisture
conditions. Because once the buttermilk is gone, you need to, you know, because eventually that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is. It's a way to sort of age something very quickly, or at least have that look. But
you can get it pretty quick.
Yeah. And I've seen it lasts in shadier conditions. And I think the caller was saying it was south side and sort of sun-baked and all. So, it might work a little bit, but...
It'd at least be fun to fool around.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you much.
And we had I don't know if you're up to identify this plant. This is one, somebody wonders, is this a wildflower or a weed? And unfortunately, Kara doesn't say where she's calling or where she's, this is on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It's
this one here.
Yeah, it looks like maybe. Kind of looks like a scabiosa to me.
Oh?
Well? I'm having a hard time with that one.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I don't know that
pretty.
I'd pull it out.
I wouldn't. And here we got some wild cucumber.
Oh, somebody there it is.
A shot of some wild cucumber. There it is along the roadside.
Oh, yeah, the white flower, just like a It's like waves of it. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Tony and Amory, thanks a lot for calling.
Yes, we got a silver maple that's old and sickly we're going to be taking out, and we want to plant a red maple in its place. What do we have to do to prep that same area to get that red maple in?
Well, I don't know that I put it in the exact location of that trunk. I put it off to the side a little bit so you're not, you know, you don't have to deal with grubbing every little bit of that old stump out if that's possible for you.
Well, part of the removal would be stump grinding. Would that be a lot of work or extra work for the guy?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to do that, but even so, they can only go so deep, and you'll still have all those bigger roots in the soil right around that. So I would, if you can, just go off 5-6 feet from that trunk, and then you have less run into those.
Okay.
Other than I don't think there's anything special, you know, about planting other than, you know, what we know. When we know how to plant the tree properly, you know, don't plant it too deep and all those sorts of things.
And make sure you get those roots spread out.
Yeah. Are you planting the tree or are you having a firm do it or what were you, I guess I was.
We were planning on doing it ourselves.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, if it's a bald and burlap tree, which, you know, most times is if you get something a little bit bigger. I think the proper soil depth is the height of the tree is most important. So when you put that tree in place, peel off the top of the root ball down to what's called the root flare, where it actually kind of buttresses out. Like if you see a tree in nature, it doesn't go straight down into the soil like a telephone pole, does it? It always has those sort of nice surface roots.
Kind of like little runners off.
You got it, yeah. So you want to peel off any excess soil on the top, which is very common when bald and burlap nursery stock, because they're tilling beds out in the fields and cultivating, and that soil goes up a little higher. So you want to get that down. In fact, you're better off being a little high than low, because the tree tends to settle over time. When you dig your hole, don't dig it real deep and then add a bunch of soil back in. Just dig it to the depth that you think you need so that soil won't settle in the future.
Yeah.
Better to dig the hole wider. Yeah, I would
better.
Do it 3-4 times the diameter of that root ball if you can, because you're going to loosen up all that soil, which will allow the roots to penetrate that a little easier. And then a nice mulch over the top, and then water it well, you know. And you're typically a bigger tree, you won't necessarily have to guy it or stake it, but if it is. If you feel like it's a possibility that it's going to cant in the hole from high winds or something, you can either stake it or guy wire it for just like one season.
Okay, and then put some protective covering around where the wire or rope would go.
Yeah, right, mm-hmm. right. Yep.
And, you know, take a look at the roots on that root ball when you there's some new research out there. I don't know if you saw this or not, Jeff, about girdling, but if you've got a tree that's been in a root ball or in a container,
especially in a container,
where it's already started, even if you straighten those roots out, they're going to go back to circling. That's what some research is showing.
Yeah, and when we plant trees, we try to purchase bald and burlap trees if possible, because they have a less tendency.
Yes.
Oftentimes they are planted bare root in the nursery fields. When they harvest them, they're cutting the roots.
Yes.
So you don't have that circling problem. However, sometimes I have seen bald and burlap trees that were obviously planted as container trees, and then then you get that issue. So yeah, it's a good idea to examine those roots a little bit, and you know, you can cut them. You know, if they're circling, you can cut them. You're better to do that now, because oftentimes the problem occurs 15 years down the road when that tree's finally getting to be the size you want it, and now you have a girdling root that's killing the tree, and that's exactly what you don't want to happen.
Yep. That's happening in one of my neighbors right now, looking at their nice tree, and those roots are right around each other.
Yeah, it makes you sick.
It does. Yeah. Good luck, Tony. Thanks a lot. Tim and Fairchild, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi. Well, a call ago, a guy was talking about what I was going to talk about, but I have transplanted over the years literally hundreds of trees, and I think almost every one has survived. But my theory is that a $5 hole in a $50 tree is not as good as a $50 hole in a $5 tree.
I like how you think, Tim.
Well, I mean, I've just done lots of it, but you had just talked about that before when I was waiting to get on the line here, but about having a hole the proper size and separating the roots and whatever. And I normally always plant a bare root trees.
Mm-hmm.
Very seldom to ever plant something out of a
mm-hmm.
container.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I would just go out in the woods and just bare root them. And most of the trees I planted have been just bare-rooted off the farm and all the woods.
Well, it sounds like you've had some good success, and I think, you know, that's right. If you do the proper job with the hole,
mm-hmm.
it's going to make a big difference.
The hole and the planting depth. Often trees in the past were planted too deep, and that causes issues down the line as well, where we'll have fungal problems because bark tissue is not has not evolved to be buried underneath the soil line. And so that's another issue. And, you know, in days of old, it was recommended that you dig that hole and then you mix peat moss and all sorts of organic matter in with the soil that you backfill. And they actually have done a lot of research and found that that is not a good idea. Just use the parent soil that you have there. And put that back around. You could, you know, break up, have big clumps and things like that. But what they found when you amended the soil is that the root system tended to stay right in that, then that mix, and then circling roots were a big issue. So this is where you encourage a tree to get out into that surrounding soil quicker. If you have any glazed soil, like at the edge of the root, you know, the hole, kind of loosen that up and again so that the roots can penetrate through there easily. So
there you go. Dave Musoff, by the way, called in to say that remember we were talking about that circular clover on the lawn? He thought bird's foot trefoil.
Oh, man, that could be.
That could well be.
But that's a pretty very showy, prominent flower, but maybe they were mowing it and mowing that off. But, you know, that always reminds me of midsummer when you drive the roads of Wisconsin, rural roads of Wisconsin. Oftentimes you see bird's foot trefoil growing along the sides, and it's absolutely beautiful. And every time I quiz my kids, what's the name of that plant? And they're like, Dad, you know, I don't remember. And it's kind of a standing joke with them. But, yeah, that could be a possibility.
We have, Faith on Facebook, or Elizabeth on Facebook said, I have rocks around my pool. Could we add pea gravel on top of the larger rocks and plant a gravel garden?
Well, I don't know that that's what I would do. You want to make sure you have the proper depth of gravel and you have a good soil underneath. And I think I wouldn't invest all that time and money into something that I wasn't sure. And oftentimes when people put rock down as mulch, what do they put underneath it? Plastic or landscape fabric.
Yeah,
you
which is
definitely don't want to have that underneath, as that will be a recipe for disaster.
Did you figure out a way to get rid of voles? Marion wants to know how to keep voles away from her.
Well, that's a good one. You know, depending on your situation, you know, snap traps, cats, of course, are always good. We've actually had mink move into the garden. We have natural waterways around us, and since that time we've had less problems. But voles, like other insects and small creatures, tend to have their populations build, and then they crash. And so you'll see this up and down over a 2-3 year period. If you have, say, we're very diligent about putting hardware cloth around young trees, because we've had crab apples or apples. So there's one this spring that was completely girdled out in the children's vegetable garden at Old Brick, which we forgot to put a cage around. And there it was this spring, completely girdled, and it's dead now. So you can protect trees that way. Perennials are a little tougher.
So we should, and just here in the last few seconds that we've got, 30 seconds or so, Old Brick Botanical Gardens, I actually have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to the garden website, but it is, the site is what?
www.oldbrick.org.
www.oldbrick.org, and I tell you what, it's a wonderful place to visit, and I want to get a group together, and I'm not going to be able to do it this fall. So next year, I've got a group of people that went with me to England and another group that went with me to Hawaii. I'm going to maybe combine those two groups, and we'll do a little trip out there and say hello.
I'll do that. I'd love to show you around. It'd be fun.
Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.